It is. Oh, like a dagger to the heart. It was like, God, bringing up my age. So we're thinking about VE Day, which we celebrate on Thursday, and that great victory, which means we can live in freedom. It means we can be here this morning doing what we are, you know, doing what we're doing. But the victory that was won at great cost. And the freedom that we enjoy physically and spiritually was won at great cost. And so I just want to think a little bit about that this morning. And we're going to look at a few photos. But I was thinking about how the victory was won and what the turning point was in that victory. And Alan thinks he knows the answers because I did a version of this talk at Eastridge and Aniska on Thursday. But because Alan and Jane were there, I've added to it to keep you on your toes so you can't go to sleep because there's stuff coming that you don't know about. So but I was thinking about how was the victory won? And it's actually, as we were worshipping this morning, there was another picture that came to mind, which I haven't got. Because I was one of the first turning points in the Second World War, and one of the first victories was the evacuation from Dunkirk. I don't know if you've seen the photo. There's a photo of people queuing around Westminster Abbey. They queue for miles because the king called for a day of prayer, and people responded. And across the land, people went into their churches, and in London, people queued around Westminster Abbey to go in and to pray for the evacuation from Dunkirk. And you know, whenever you watch these things on the news or in documentaries, they never mention the miracle of Dunkirk, because those prayers were answered, not just in that the channel became a flat calm, that you could basically get a rowing boat across it, but also unexpectedly the cloud was, a weather front came in, and the sky was filled with clouds, which meant the Luftwaffe were grounded. And if the skies had been clear, then the Luftwaffe would have been in the air and the evacuation would not have happened as it did. So it was a miracle because, you know, tens of thousands of the British Expeditionary Force were brought back to England and became the core of the army that then crossed Normandy 4 years later. And if they hadn't been evacuated, things would have been very much worse. So we sang in our, didn't we, this morning in one of those lovely songs, you know, Heaven come and fight for me. Our victory is a melody. And so often in the Old Testament, victories are won with the worshippers going out first. It's the worshippers that go out ahead of the army. It's the Ark of the Covenant with the presence of God that goes out first. But one of the real turning points, of course, was 6th of June 1944 and the D-Day landings, when the tide began to be turned. And there was one person, and no guessing who it was because we've seen the photo, but there was one person who was desperate to be there. And he told Eisenhower, I'm going to sail across with the landings on a ship, and because I want to watch the battle unfold. I want to be on a ship. And Eisenhower thought this was a very bad idea because he thought there was a reasonable chance of... you can put the photo up now because we know... he thought... He said, Church, what happens if you're killed? What happens if there's a stray shell that kills you? It'll be at this point in the war, this is going to be a complete disaster. You can't come. And Churchill said, well, I'm the Prime Minister. I have authority over you. I'm coming. And Eisenhower was like, no, this is a disaster. And Churchill moved down to Portsmouth, I think on the 3rd of June. He moved down and he sort of took lodgings in a train carriage in a siding, ready for the off, because 5th of June was the day that was set to go. So he's in a train carriage in a siding in Portsmouth, waiting to go. And Eisenhower's like, I can't have you go. So Eisenhower wrote to the king. He wrote to King George and he says, I've got a problem. The Prime Minister wants to come and I don't think he should. So the king had a word with Churchill and said, I've got authority over you. You're not going. So this is a picture of Churchill on the 12th of June. He finally got across on the 12th of June and arrived in Normandy. But the thing with Churchill was he wanted to be at the thick of the... He wanted to be at the heart of the action. He wanted to be in the thick of it because he was... had been a soldier. And his exploits in his youth, both as a soldier and as a journalist, are bonkers. When you read about his youth and the things that he did and the courage that he displayed and the reckless courage that he displayed, he sensed he kind of had this almost just amazing protection around him. But he wanted to be at the heart of the battle. And as I was thinking about that, I was thinking about our Jesus. Let me just read some of these words from, we're going to have a number of short readings this morning, and these are very familiar, but from John's Gospel. In the beginning was the Word, Jesus, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. That's our God, a God who didn't stand aloof from the suffering of the world, but stepped down into the world and became one of us. And lived in our mess and lived in our conflict, and from within became the answer that we needed. And Churchill kind of had a heart like that. He wanted to be. He didn't want to stay in Downing Street in his bunker. He wanted to be in the heart of the action. And our God is a God who steps down from heaven into the heart of the action. As Julian was leading us this morning, we're just having that opportunity to invite Jesus into, you know, the conflicts that we're in at the moment, or the sadnesses that we're in at the moment, or the situations in our lives where we long for breakthrough. Well, that's our God. That's our God. And Churchill was one of those. And the next photo with the D-Day landings, one of the problems was overcoming the obstacles that had been put in place. And the Nazis knew that an invasion was coming at some point, and they'd had 4 years to prepare for it, and so they poured millions of tons of concrete into the ground, built these enormous bunkers, and as far as they could across the beaches, they installed as many obstacles as they could. So this picture is of I was going to say caterpillars, but that's not the right word. Hedgehogs, that's the one, yes. Don't know why caterpillars came into my brain. So hedgehogs, which were designed to rip out the bottom of landing craft. And then there were things called Belgian gates, which were like big iron gates with mines tied to the top of them. They had telegraph poles that were jammed into the sand, sticking out into the sea. And then as you got further up the beach, there were mines. There was a seawall. There was miles and miles of barbed wire. I mean, they literally, as far as they could, they built the Atlantic Wall. And it wasn't an impenetrable obstacle, but they tried to make it an impenetrable obstacle. And it was designed to stop people getting across. And one of the issues that the D-Day planners had was, how do we get across this obstacle? If you've ever seen Saving Private Ryan, it gives you an impression, but it doesn't give you quite an impression, because they filmed it on a beach in Ireland, and the beach didn't have great depth to it. But the beach, certainly at places like Omaha, it was 200 metres across the beach from low tide to the seawall, covered in obstacles that they had to get across. And we know that for us in this world, there is, you know, there's a chasm, there's an obstacle between us and God. I was reading in Luke chapter 16, the story of the rich man and Lazarus. And Lazarus, who's this beggar at the rich man's gate, and the rich man does nothing for him. And then Lazarus dies and is welcomed into heaven. And then the rich man dies and finds himself not in heaven, finds himself in hell. And there's this conversation that goes on, and Abraham, who is speaking in this episode, says, "Besides all this, between us and you, a great chasm has been set in place, so that those who want to go from here to you cannot, nor can anyone cross over from there to us." There's an obstacle between us and God, and it's the obstacle of sin. Paul writes about it in Romans 3:23. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. He writes in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 1, for you were dead in your transgressions and sins. That's the obstacle that we have faced, and that's the obstacle that still exists for so many in our world, this separation between us and God. And how do we overcome that obstacle? That was one of the issues for the D-Day planners, was how do we get across these obstacles? And how do we get men and equipment onto the beaches fast enough in order to overwhelm the enemy who had dug in fixed fortifications, establish a bridgehead, and fight off the counterattack that is bound to come? How do we do it? And the answer was provided by a man called Andrew Higgins, who not many people have heard of. But when Eisenhower one time was interviewed about the war, he was in New Orleans, and which is where Andrew Higgins had his boatyard, and he said, Higgins won the war. Higgins won the war for us. So this is what Andrew Higgins came up with, because the problem was how to get people onto the beach. He was a boat builder, and he was a genius, but the US Navy didn't like him. He wasn't kind of part of the establishment, and he was a bit of a maverick, and he did his own thing, and he was a bit of a crazy guy. But he was a genius at building boats. And so he kind of came up with these ideas, and the US Navy said, oh, well, that's very nice. There, off you go. We've got our own designers. But their own designers couldn't come up with a solution for getting over the obstacles. Higgins did. And this was his landing craft. And he designed it so that you could drive it onto the beach, drop the ramp, get the men and equipment off, and then reverse it back off the beach and go and collect other equipment and troops. And in the end, the US Navy kind of capitulated and said, well, we haven't been able to come up with any good ideas, and yours looks all right, actually. So they built, I don't know, 20, 23,000 of them. And they were used all over the world on amphibious landings, but particularly at Normandy. And they were able to ride in over the top of some of the obstacles, ride up onto the beach. One of the reasons the Germans were taken by surprise was because they just assumed that the attack would happen at high tide, because they thought that's the obvious time. High tide, haven't got so far to run over the beaches. Eisenhower said, no, let's go at low tide. They won't be expecting that, and we'll get in before somebody else. So anyway, that was what they did. But Higgins was this complete genius who came up with this design that overcame the obstacle. And Eisenhower said, Higgins won the war, because without him, we wouldn't have been able to get on the beach fast enough. And because of Higgins, by the end of D-Day, they got 175,000 men onto the beach, which is phenomenal. You think in less than 24 hours, they got 175,000 men and equipment onto the beach. Quite a lot of it got stuck there for a while, but they got them there because of this boat. Well, that's our Jesus, isn't it? We face this obstacle of sin, this separation between us and God. What do we read in Luke chapter 22, 23 even, verses 44 and 45? It was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 PM, for the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. The curtain of the temple, that curtain that represented the barrier between us and the presence of God, that obstacle that we couldn't get through, and Jesus' death on the cross tears it in half from top to bottom. Interesting that that's the direction in which the curtain is torn, not from the bottom to the top, it's from the top to the bottom, because it's God who tears it open. And that's what Jesus does on the cross. He overcomes this obstacle of sin. Once the D-Day landing was secure and the bridgehead was secure, effectively the war was won. It was just a matter of time, but the war had been won. And when Jesus died on the cross, that great victory over sin and death had been won. There were still battles to fight. Let me put the last picture up. So this is from VE Day itself, 8th of June, 1945. I'm not sure if the king is waving or if he's just thrown something into the crowd. It's a very sort of interesting arm movement with his wave. I guess it's probably a sort of posh way of waving, isn't it? It's like, you know, we wave like that and the royalty go. So anyway, it's the king and queen and the princesses and Churchill in the middle. And when you get the photos from the other direction, you know, the mall is packed with people who are just celebrating this great victory. You know, they know the enemy has been defeated. The great battle has been won. It's over. It's been done. It's like Jesus on the cross. It is finished. This is kind of one of those moments. It's finished. You know, you can't imagine the relief that must have been in, you know, people's hearts after, you know, 6 years of just brutal, brutal war and conflict and just the carnage of it, and just have this moment of, it's done. It's done. We've won. But the reality is, while they're celebrating, Europe is in ruins. You know, Europe is in ruins. Most of it has been demolished. And even though they're celebrating victory, there are more battles that are to come. The communists are marching west. And in the days after VE Day, there's this realization, well, actually, we've defeated one enemy, but the enemy is still on the march. And if we don't do something, that enemy may reach. So there's a whole another set of circumstances that have to happen. And in those days, we had an American president who was a bit more on side than the current one, who was, you know, prepared to invest and spend big in order to stop that. But that was the thing. There's a victory won. It's finished. But actually, it's not finished. There's more to come. And in the days after the war, politicians were quick to say, well, we've won the victory. Now we can build utopia. You know, now we can build a peace. And made lots and lots of promises. And sometimes promises can be empty. But the victory that Jesus won for us wasn't built on empty promises. It was built on an empty tomb. Because it was a real victory that had been won over a real thing. But that was the reality. VE Day, there was still a peace to be won. And even though we rejoice in the victory of Jesus on the cross, there's still a peace to be won and a peace to be established. This is what Jesus has done for us. Paul writing in Colossians chapter 1, 13 and 14. He has rescued us. Jesus has rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. The obstacle has been overcome. The curtain has been torn. We are already living in the kingdom of Jesus. But Paul also writes in Romans chapter 8, 22:3, we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. We've won the victory, we've still got to fight the battles. And that's our reality, isn't it? We know the certainty of our eternal life. We know that Jesus died for us. We know that the obstacle of sin has been overcome. We know that we live in the freedom of the Son of God. But every day we're fighting battles. In our culture, we're fighting battles. There's still an enemy on the march who doesn't want to lay down quietly. And that was the reality after D-Day. There was an enemy that didn't want to lie down quietly, still had to be fought. But we know that ultimately we will share in a complete victory. Let me close with these words from Revelation 22, where John is seeing in a vision of what we're looking forward to. And this is what he writes. The angel showed me the river of the water of life, as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle of the great street of the city. On each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. No longer will there be any curse. The throne of God and of the Lamb will be in the city, and his servants will serve him. They will see his face, and his name will be on their foreheads. There will be no more night. They will not need the light of a lamp or the light of the sun, for the Lord God will give them light, and they will reign forever and ever. That's what we're looking forward to. That's what our Jesus won for us on the cross. And as we think about these things this week, and as we celebrate and remember victory in Europe Day, Just remember that freedom always comes at a cost. And our physical freedom came at a cost, and our spiritual freedom came at a great cost. And that's why we give thanks. So let's turn to prayer, and let's just spend a few moments in prayer together. And as situations come to mind, we